everybody, it's Michelle Fisher, and welcome into View From My Window. As always, I thank you for joining us today. Today, Kylie Hope, Director of Indiana's Division of Disability and Rehabilitative Services, along with the ARC's Executive Director, Kim Dotson, join me to discuss several initiatives that DDRS has underway to improve programs and services for people with intellectual and developmental disabilities and their families. We have a lot to explore, so let's get started. Hello to you ladies.
Good morning.
Good morning. So nice to have you both. First, Kylie, let's talk about changes taking place at the federal level and their approach to home and community-based services, and then how Indiana is working to redesign Indiana's Medicaid waiver program that helps provide these services.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, first of all, thank you guys and the ARC for having us here.
We're very excited
to talk about these initiatives as well as make sure that everyone gets this information. So thank you. So talking about a federal kind of level and those changes, so the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, commonly known as CMS, published a final rule in January of 2014 that really focused in on Medicaid home and community-based services and supports, like you mentioned. And the real intent of that rule is pretty simple. It's to ensure that individuals receiving services and supports through HCBS programs, or what we refer to in Indiana commonly as the Indiana Medicaid waivers, that they have full access to benefits of community living. And second is to really offer the opportunity for those individuals to receive services in the most integrated setting appropriate. So we have embarked, Indiana's division and the Bureau of Developmental Disability Services has begun a two-year project in April is when we had the first kickoff to really look at how do we redesign Indiana's Medicaid waiver program. And as some of you in the audience and all of you recognize that Indiana has, through the Bureau of Developmental Disability Services, have two Medicaid HCBS waivers. It's called the Family Support Waiver, or FSW, and the Community Integration Habilitation Report, or the CIH waiver. So we're really looking at how do we really have the appropriate services and supports that can meet the needs of the individuals we're serving. So the key goal of this project is really to, again, encourage, enhance community integration through supports that are purposeful and meaningful for that individual. And we want to move to a very, very much of a person-centered, family-driven system that builds a system that promotes autonomy, choice, and control, but also balancing, of course, that health and safety needs for individuals. We really want to ensure that self-advocates and families are there to help drive this initiative, and that we are designing a system that helps support their needs so that they can live the life that they want. We have contracted with some national experts. So our contractor on this is Human Services Research Institute, and they are really focused in on helping us redesign the waiver system in Indiana. We have, of course, a lot of great subcontractors involved as well from national experts, and we really also want to ensure that we have local and statewide provider organizations and advocate organizations and self-advocates at the table in our redesign process so that we can make sure that we develop a comprehensive system that meets the needs of those we are serving. We have a goal that we hope that this is implemented by spring of 2021, but we also know within the division that we want to make sure that we are methodical and thoughtful in this approach, that we are implementing something that we feel like people have buy-in and understanding of what the purpose is. Again, the purpose of this is to change for families and individuals we serve. This is not driven by any specific legislative need or fiscal need or legal need. It really is to ensure that we can provide the right supports for people.
And Kim, she was talking about how self-advocates are involved, and this is not just a cookie-cutter type of program. What does that mean for the ARC of Indiana?
Well, no, it's an exciting time, and you know, I think this is one of the things that we can be really excited about. We have great leadership right now in our state, starting with our lieutenant governor, but certainly over at FSSA and under Kylie's leadership. So I think it's an exciting time to really be going through this remodeling stage, and it's really nice to know know that those that are in charge, Kylie specifically, really does want to hear the family and self-advocate perspective. And if you don't have that, something's going to be left out. And I think that, again, that's a strength of this team, is they understand the values and the needs and the importance of hearing that perspective from our self-advocates. And fortunately, we have lots of self-advocates that are willing to lend it.
And Kylie, you were talking about, you took the first step toward improving Indiana's Medicaid waiver programs with the adoption of the Life Course Framework. And I remember talking to Heather Dane about this Life Course Framework, and that was fantastic. So talk about that and share how this program can help individuals and their families as well.
Yeah, absolutely. So I can probably spend several hours on this Life Course Framework.
Too.
And I would say, as a family member, the Life Course Framework really was a game changer for me when I crossed paths with this philosophy. And I believe that this philosophy can really help use a model to ensure that individuals that are able to live the life that they actually want to live. And that is the core, right? Mm-hmm. How are they want? What are their dreams? What are their aspirations? Where are they wanting to go next Friday? But also, where are they wanting to go next year and in 5 years? And really making sure that we have supports and services available for them to actually do that. Yeah, I won't take a whole lot of time on the Life Course Framework because I understand that there is a previous podcast, but just as a reminder that this framework is really, it's not a program, it's really a more of a philosophy, and it was developed by families for families to help individuals of all abilities and all ages and stages of life development to really help frame their vision for a good life. And I think that's really our core in this waiver redesign, of making sure that that is at our, that's our northern star in this process. So actually, after I learned about this at a conference, I brought this back to the division's leadership team, and we quickly knew that we needed to be part of this movement. And so Indiana did adopt this Life Course Framework, and we have integrated this philosophy literally in everything we do across the division, not just specifically with the Bureau of Developmental Disability Services. So if you all have not already, I would strongly encourage all of you to maybe check out some of the Life Course tools. Those can be found at lifecoursetools.com. There's lots of different guides varying different types of ages across the life domains. But what I will say is I did a bit for our division's InVision newsletter. It's been a few editions back, but it really, I wrote about three of the top reasons why I think this Life Course philosophy is necessary. And here are the three. So one, it's simple and it's easy to understand. As we all know that it's, in my opinion, it's critical that we use common language so that we are helping individuals really designing this life. We come in a very complex world with lots of acronyms, with lots of things that people come to the table they're uncertain of. They feel like they don't have the same, you know, ability at the table than maybe some people, provider or case manager, that has all the tools and all the right words. And my thing is, you don't need to know the jargon. You don't need to know the acronyms. You need just to tell us what are your dreams and what are your aspirations and what are your needs, so that we can then, as a system, help develop that as part of your team. So the second key point is really focused in on my philosophy and our team's philosophy that active participation for individuals, our self-advocates and families, is key, and that it is important that those individuals are actually in the driver's seat in developing their plan. And so I feel, again, these complexities of the system, really it's intimidating for people coming to this table or their team meetings to tell them what they want. And I feel like the Life Course Framework and even utilizing the Life Course tools helps them really lend themselves to have a voice and be active in that and not just passive in their team meeting. And then lastly, we've talked already a little bit, is that it is critical that we focus in on designing the life that the individual wants to live. Services and supports, both paid and unpaid, should be person-centered and holistic and ensure meaningful access to individuals, the individual's home and community, where they define and where they want. And this provides that avenue for them to find those supports and live the good life and not just the quote-unquote service life.
Mm-hmm. And talk about that. She said service life. I love that, because sometimes as, and I loved the domains that this program really helps self-advocates and anyone live. Because as a person with a disability myself, I had no clue that I could direct myself. So talk about what that means for someone when you say you're not going to live a service life. This is your life with what you want.
Yeah, this is truly empowering people, right? The whole conversation around the life course empowers the person to make decisions for themselves, for the life that they want. And I think Kylie said it very well. We want everybody to have a good life. We want them to have services and supports that helps them create that good life, not that gives it to them without any of their own input. I think the life course has come along at a time that is really critical for the state of Indiana. And I think having this philosophy guide us through our waiver redesign process is going to be really helpful to families, and I think it's part of the reason why we're so excited about it, because again, it puts the focus where it needs to be, which is the individual themselves putting forth the decisions of the life that they want, and then it also just makes sure that the services and supports are there to support that, rather than telling a person, these are the services and supports you're going to get, I hope it works.
Yeah, it's so exciting to me. So, Kylie, I also understand that DDRS has received a grant that's being utilized to look at how waiver services can be improved, including how the current system for monitoring the safety, health, and well-being of individuals with intellectual and developmental disabilities can be enhanced, and it's called the Living Well Initiative. And we're always talking about the safety and health of self-advocates and people anyway. So tell me about that.
Yeah, absolutely. So as part of the process of redesigning the waiver program, so DDRS, as you indicated, was awarded what's called the Living Well Grant. And this is funded through the Administration of Community Living, and it is to increase meaningful community integration and independence of individuals with intellectual and developmental disabilities and to improve the quality of home and community-based services. So what does that mean, right? So
layman's terms?
That's right. So we know within the division, we know that our goal is to develop a system that supports the individual as the primary driver of their life and the system as a whole. So taking that concept, if you will, we know that the waiver redesign process, that is the piece that will help us redesign what types of services and supports are offered to individuals that would be utilizing the Medicaid home and community-based services system. However, we know that the front end, how do we appropriately educate and engage individuals? And on the back end, are we really getting the outcomes that we want with the use of Medicaid home and community-based services? So the Living Well Grant allows us to just do that. It allows us to sharpen our focus on the critical pieces like education, engagement, and empowerment of self-advocates and families, and provide a pathway for us to identify what are those desired outcomes that we want to see and aligning that with appropriate quality metrics. In our system currently, a lot of people will understand that it can be very compliance focused, right? Did you have a plan, yes or no?
Mm.
Well, we want to go beyond that. Do you not only have the plan, but how can we start looking at the outcomes? Are we providing the services and supports, paid and even unpaid, to allow this individual to, again, live that life or get that quality of life that they are wanting? Not an easy thing to do, but one that we are hoping to tackle. Again, through this grant, we have some funding and experts at the table that can help us shape that. And then finally, another key component of the Living Well Grant is to update our comprehensive compliance oversight system. And that is really to, again, like you said, to ensure the health and safety of individuals, of course, but we also need to balance their ability to take risk, again, to point to the fact that they may want to live this life that they want, and how do they take the risk with the appropriate supports that get them there, and that we aren't just overly being focused on just making sure they have health and safety needs that really become sometimes a barrier to the life they want to live.
Mm-hmm. And Kim, talk about, I mean, we've heard in the news horrendous things that happen to people with disabilities that I can't even imagine. But knowing that DDRS has said, okay, we need to look into this further, how does that come into our mission as well?
Yeah. So, I mean, one, I think the Living Well Grant is, you know, another wonderful resource and tool to have during the waiver redesign process. I think, you know, we are always concerned about the health and safety of people with disabilities in the service delivery system, first and foremost. And I think the more, again, that we have people with disabilities driving their services, choosing their providers. That is always the right way to do things. It's not going to eliminate bad things from happening, but it does put people in charge again and empowers them, so it gives them a voice. When you are putting together a system and a service plan that you know that you are in charge of, you know that people are accountable to you. So I think that you just take a little bit more seriousness in the services that you're receiving. You pay attention a lot more to who you're choosing to provide those services. And I think all of that is a recipe for success. Again, I think all of these tools working together is a reason why we should be excited about the time that we're in and the path going forward on the waiver redesign.
Absolutely. And Kylie, DDRS is providing opportunities for individuals and families to be part of this overall effort to improve programs and services. Can you share ways that people can be involved?
Yeah, absolutely. And we have appreciated people's already involvement from sending just me personally emails that they have like, hey, this would be a great idea. This was successful in my son's life. How can we do this more? But we have recently have a stakeholder survey to get some feedback through the waiver redesign contractor of trying to get some, making sure we're on the right track. We also, when we have kind of some of the concept paper designed based on a lot of that stakeholder feedback, we will be having several iterations of public comment period. Another way to become intimately involved more quickly is to attend the DDRS Advisory Council meetings. They are public meetings, and you are welcome to attend. That may be the best way to get a flavor and a better understanding of some of the upcoming needs within the waiver redesign, but as a system as a whole with the Bureau of Developmental Disability Services. As many of you know, the 1102 Task Force is still ongoing, which is great. That's a great way to tune in to some of the strategies and some of the updates that we have with respect to those 34 recommendations, where about one third of them are related to the waiver redesign process. And we hope to continue to, we will likely be forging, identifying a more stakeholder community process so that people can become more involved specifically in the waiver redesign. So that is coming at another time, so maybe we could do another podcast. There's also building bridges that the Bureau of Developmental Disability Services does throughout the state, and that you can find more information on our website, and I know the ARC newsletter also provides those updates of when those are scheduled. That's another way to come, ask questions, share stories, share your frustrations, all of which we are able to kind of digest and put forth to our contractor to say, here's some areas that we know from families they're frustrated, or we know from families that actually have been successful, or we know from providers that have done some really awesome creative things, and we want to make sure our system, or we have opportunities for all providers to have those best practices in place as well. So as we continue, there's current ways to do that, but as we build our way down the pathway of waiver redesign, there will absolutely be even more opportunities to have some more targeted stakeholder engagements.
And Kim, Kylie was talking about the meetings. I mean, when you go and you get a sense of, okay, I've been through this process, or stories or successes or frustrations, What does it do for people? What does it do for you as a executive director of an organization too?
Well, again, it's empowering and it's refreshing. I mean, it's nice to be able to be at the table where, again, the leadership at FSSA has made sure that people with disabilities, self-advocates, and their families are already there having a conversation and being able to share their experiences. All of that is very positive. I think, again, there are multiple ways that people can be involved. Even if you're not at the table, that doesn't mean that your voice is going to be ignored. You can write in comments. I mean, Kylie is very good. I mean, she gives out her email. People send her things personally. They can always send them to the ARC. We want to hear from families. And you know, Kylie has stressed this. She wants this to be a process driven by families and self-advocates. So we need to make sure that you know, all families, not just those that live in Indianapolis and can get to a meeting, but that all families know about the different ways to get involved, and they feel empowered to share their story, because we need to hear about the frustrations as well as what's working well. And that's what's going to make our system better.
Well, you guys, you know what? I researched this and I looked over the questions, and this is a lot of work, but you guys have are dedicated individuals, and I'm so happy to be friends with you and to know you, and I cannot thank you enough for allowing me to tell this wonderful program. Thank you so very much.
Thank you for having us,
Kim,
Michelle.
And Kylie Hope, thank you so very much. And thank you so much for listening today, everybody. Have a great day today. Bye-bye.